Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. As the natural gas industry shrinks, so does the property tax revenue that funds many services in Garfield County. It was announced this week that a half a dozen libraries will be shortening their hours of operation and laying off employees. What's more important, tax revenue or the environment?
The Thompson Divide is just the ultimate question here of oil and gas versus a recreation economy and what's more sustainable versus what is more lucrative. Does the library stay open 7 days a week?
The Aspen City Council is hoping to take up a proposal to ban retail chain stores downtown after it completes its overhaul on the land use code.
I think this could be some of the most complicated legislation Aspen has ever seen. There are just so many moving parts.
Meanwhile, the retail climate in Glenwood Springs is healthy for locally owned businesses, and when the new Grand Avenue Bridge is built, they are banking on it being even better. Speaking of the bridge, the construction of it is on schedule and should be open this time next year. Many say that the $125 million project is necessitated by Aspen's consumption needs.
If that bridge was carrying a load that was just dealing with Glenwood, you wouldn't need a four-lane bridge. Aspen skews everything.
And while the bridge replacement is the biggest infrastructure project on the Western Slope in decades, downtown Aspen's pedestrian malls are going to get ripped up soon, so the 60-year-old utilities underneath can be replaced. Finally, a forum focused on immigration was held this past weekend. Most attendees were reassured that the Latino population in the Valley is safe from deportation.
It doesn't make a community safer if immigrants can be victimized.
Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Andy Stone and Roger Merolt, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Thanks for joining me in the studio and Randy on the phone at the Glenwood Post-Independent.
Good to be here.
Great to be here.
Happy to participate. Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Randy, there was a story that you had in the paper this week about the Garfield County Libraries doing some layoffs and cutting back hours, and we knew this was coming. We've talked about this before, but now it's a real reality. And I think this is a good example of putting all of your economic eggs in one basket. And I'm wondering if there was any discussion that you've heard from anyone around that community about having such a heavy tax base for a public service, you know, like, was there ever a concern about funding all of it for such a with money that's so volatile, a money source that's so volatile?
Well, the whole county's in that boat, and we in county commissioner candidate interviews always ask, what can be done to diversify the economic base of the county? And a couple of readers have written in complaining about that. And really, it's pretty difficult. We aren't going to be attracting heavy industry here. The logistics of manufacturing and shipping and the demand for water are such that, you know, you're not going to have a factory that employs large numbers of people. Oil and gas, or in our case, natural gas, is really the only thing that holds the potential for bigger pay, you know, significant employment, and a more industrial job base. And it's a cyclical business, of course. That's one of the reasons that we argue so much for protecting the environment and promoting the recreation economy.
And so, it would seem as if the way to, it's not really diversifying, but it's simply to not get too carried away spending the money as it comes in, to accept the fact that it's likely going to disappear at some point. As you say, it's so cyclical. There have been some incredible crashes in this region and in those industries before. So they ought to put the money away.
But that you know, that is the answer, except for if you put that money away, then the taxpayers start to scream about cutting our taxes so we don't have to pay so much. And then you end up with a really low, then you have to raise taxes during the downturn, which is a difficult thing to do politically.
Right.
You know, I think that a public-private partnership, I mean, there is a Garfield County Library Foundation. I think that maybe the library district hasn't done as good a job of going out and getting donors as perhaps would be prudent, given that we've known this is coming. There have been sales tax refunds required by the state from charges that were levied against some drilling companies. We have, with public money, really great new libraries around Garfield County, and use of those libraries is up. So it does seem like the library district would be wise to try to tap some of the deep pockets that are here and some of the folks that support what the libraries offer.
So they basically, with that property tax, it's funded primarily from the property tax revenue that they receive from the oil and gas industry, and they went ahead and opened seven branches with that money?
Six.
I
would have to do inventory, but I think it's six.
Right. So, I mean, I just wonder if there was ever any thought what the repercussions would be. Like, how do we pay for these things if that industry goes south? You know, I don't think none of us were around to know what those discussions were, but you would think that one would bring that up. And then my next question would be, is there anything else that could get cut, Randy? I mean, given this, you know.
Well, I think the county in general is hoping that within a couple of years, you know, the industry turns around. And the Oklahoma Attorney General was just appointed the EPA director nominee. So that certainly bodes well for the natural gas industry, right?
Yeah. You know, meanwhile, your paper has an editorial about applauding the protection of the Thompson Divide with the canceling of the oil and gas leases. And then there was also an op-ed from David Ludlam saying how important natural gas is and, you know, how much we need to rely on it. So it's like this internal fight.
What I noticed, I was reading that, particularly the response, I thought his response from the oil and gas guy was extraordinarily mean-spirited and snarky. It was nasty. And it felt to me, just we talked, as you were just saying, how the Oklahoma Attorney General is a new head of EPA. It sounded to me like this guy had in the back of his mind sort of, okay, we won this election, so I'm just going to be as nasty as I can because I don't care what you people think. We're about to get all this stuff back again. He talked about compromise in some other areas.
I didn't get that. But what I got out of it was, hey, people, you better realize what natural gas provides for you.
There were a lot of nasty little digs.
I don't have it
in front of me right now, but there were a lot of, you know, sort of shots at the elitists who are enjoying their cappuccinos or whatever it was. it was really astonishing.
Thompson Divide is just the ultimate question here of oil and gas versus a recreation economy and what's more sustainable versus what is more lucrative. You know, does that mean does the library stay open 7 days a week?
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're relying on your government services, and I guess that's the case in Aspen. I mean, having this conversation at the council table about banning chain stores, when really what this group that's pushing for that is they just want lower rents so they can have locally serving businesses. And it's like the economy on this end of the valley puts all of its eggs in one basket when it comes to luxury retail.
The luxury sector and luxury real estate.
Right.
And is that taking over from the tourism economy? You know, perhaps there's two buckets here, but we're very reliant on both of them.
Yeah, and it's sales tax for the city of Aspen. So when the recession hit and all those stores closed and, you know, there wasn't as much
Started laying people off.
Yeah, and our services started diminishing, and you have to start making decisions as elected officials about what's going to get cut. Can you give us an update, Curtis, as to what is happening with the luxury chain ban proposal?
So when we spoke last week, the council had asked for the specific details for a specific ordinance to be brought before them on December 12th and potentially voted in. Since then, they have decided that they need to take more time and they are not interested in considering anything specific on this by a 4-1 vote, not until February. So this presents kind of a dilemma for the citizens group that is pushing this thing, because they have said all along, well, if the council doesn't want to do this, we're perfectly happy to start collecting signatures outside of the city market and put it on the May ballot.
Which is the trendy way of doing legislation, yeah. according
That's
to
the new
mayor.
Way.
Right. It's the new way. Which, and you know, the mayor's point, and even Bert Myron, who has been the go-to guy for citizen referendums, they're all saying, look, it's probably better to have these discussions and to craft this legislation in the council chambers where there can be give and take and you can bring in everyone who's affected and have a conversation about the pros and cons and you know, tweaking it to meet everyone's needs. You know, when you go this referendum route, people pretty much just put up whatever they want. I mean, they can still go and do the outreach, but I think it's just a lot more effective when it's a public hearing. That said, for the deadline to get these signatures is the end of January. The council's not going to take this up again until the middle of February. So what do they do? Do they have faith that this is going to work out for them in the council chambers? Which, I mean, I don't know if I'd make that bet.
But if it doesn't work out in council chambers, then what you're basically having are the people who are making this petition, they're drafting the legislation. And I don't know. I think this could be some of the most complicated legislation Aspen has ever seen. There are just so many moving parts and so many unknowns that to put that just in the hands of some people who think it's a great idea and want to move forward with it, I think it's a little bit dangerous.
And, you know, in the past time around, when, as we were just saying, with when Bert was spearheading the citizen initiatives, that was a very different case. Back then, it was the council had failed to act and, in fact, had taken actions contrary to what people wanted.
Twice.
Exactly. And people were fed up with the council working in the opposite direction from what everyone wanted. In this case, the council is saying, okay, we will move in this direction. We want to consider this legislation, but it needs a little more time. And that's a very different situation.
And these people maybe are being a little pushy about it. Like, watch us. We have the power.
Well,
we can do this.
To be clear, I asked directly after that meeting, are you guys going to do the referendum? And the answer I've got is we don't know yet. We would still prefer to work with the council. So I don't think they've made up their minds yet.
And the council could extend the moratorium, which right. would be mm-hmm. a sign that they are indeed working on it.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. So the former mayor, John Bennett, of the city of Aspen, he said in your article, Curtis, that he estimated that the makeup of the downtown retail climate or landscape is about 60-65% chain. Mm-hmm. Randy, do you have any guesstimate as to what it is in Glenwood, given that, you know, your last editorial is pushing, you're asking people to support local business, given the bridge construction? One of your more recent editorials was a call to action to people to shop locally and to spend their money at locally serving businesses. Do you have any guesstimate as to what the makeup is in downtown Glenwood? To me, it feels like it's a lot of locally owned.
Yeah, locally downtown
served.
Glenwood is mostly locally owned stores. Glenwood Meadows, of course, has the franchises, and that's a big sales tax driver. That's a large chunk of our retail sales is out at Glenwood Meadows.
And that's Glenwood sort of moved all those franchise businesses out to the new mall, and downtown stays the way it is. Aspen doesn't have that choice. But I wonder, people are talking about the preponderance of those chain stores in downtown Aspen. There are a lot of them. I'm wondering how much they actually contribute to the sales tax revenues. I mean, people are talking about how they can open these stores and pay huge rents, and they don't care about losing money because they're enormous corporations. So if they're not making money, then maybe they're not selling that much, and maybe they're not contributing that much. Has anybody broken out those stores as a percentage of the sales tax revenue?
Boy, that's a project I really want to dive into, just to test out that assertion that these stores don't actually make money. I've had commercial brokers tell me that's completely ridiculous, and these stores wouldn't be here if they weren't at least breaking even. You know, other people say, no, this is how they operate. It's marketing expense. And the point has also been made that even some of these independent stores are owned by some rich guy who just wants a tax write-off for his trips to Aspen when it loses.
My guess would be that those retail stores make are those chain stores make more money than we'd like to believe. I mean, our sales tax revenue in this town are high, and if you go out and talk to the locally owned smaller businesses, those are the people who tell you that what business is like, and a lot of them are really struggling. So I don't think most of those sales are being made by the successful, you know, single store Aspen business. I think those chain stores sell a lot.
I tell you what, I think if anybody wants to see a downtown Aspen filled with locally owned businesses, their best bet is to invent a time machine, because I think unless you go back 20, 30 years, you're never going to see that again.
Right, and it's hard to run one of these shops, you know, especially if you're independent mom and pop. I mean, it's not an easy way to make a living, I don't think.
No. Randy, what do you hear from your retailers in Glenwood Springs downtown? Just as how is it doing business there? Is it difficult?
So it's really interesting that there are business owners and people coming in and buying businesses who are staking bets on what it's going to be like after the bridge is built. We have a major downtown outdoor company, Summit Canyon, that's moving across the river to what's going to be the more new part of downtown that's more walkable with new landscaping on the north side of the bridge. We have a building right at the foot of the bridge, right beside the bridge, being renovated. A couple new restaurant owners. I think people expect that it's going to be pretty strong. One of the narratives this year that I thought was interesting is that the Chamber of Commerce and the bridge project people who are in touch with the retailers say that the visitors were fine, and visitors do account for about 3/4 of our retail sales here, and that it's really the locals who tend to stay away from downtown, at least during the bridge construction. So short answer is I think that business owners are really pretty bullish about what downtown's going to be like.
Do you think there could ever be this scenario plays out like Basalt, where it's Willits versus Old Town, you know, with that new Riverwalk area mm-hmm. that you're talking about on the other side of the river?
Well, those are going to be connected. I mean, it's only a quarter-mile walk from one side to the other, and it's not such a big town that you feel like, oh, I shouldn't go over here and see what the restaurants are like over here. I don't necessarily expect that. I do think the north side of the river is going to be nice with new streetscaping, much less traffic on 6th Street, and probably a little bit quieter than the traditional part of downtown. But, you know, if I were, and I'm not, starting a small business or a restaurant, I might look hard at that new area. But I think so much of Glenwood Springs tourism is people who have come here forever, for generations. They came here when they were kids. They came here with their grandparents. And they're going to want to visit some of those same places that they always have.
I would think as a shopper, if I'm at Summit Canyoneering, I'm going across the street to the Daily Bread. That's my thing. So if I now go to Summit to go buy my next camping item, I'm probably going to stay over on the other side. So I just wonder if how much the Chamber is considering that. Or
well, on this side of the street, there's the Confluence development. You know, we have the Roaring Fork River and the Colorado River that come together. It's really just 4 or 5 blocks west of downtown, and that will be the next area of development. And with the new 8th Street connection that goes straight from downtown to Midland, the riverfront along 7th Street in a couple of 3 years is going to be a whole lot more appealing.
You want to give us an update on the bridge work?
Downtown's torn up again. It's, you know, they have to build the walls for the new bridge, and they have to dig up the temporary sidewalks that they put in front of the merchants along Grand on both sides between 7th and 8th Street. So it's a construction zone, and it will remain a construction zone pretty much until the bridge is done. The relief that will come will be next March when the new pedestrian bridge opens. Mm-hmm. So I think that will be a nice thing for visitors. It's going to be nice to be able to walk over. It's going to be wider. There are going to be seating areas. You're going to be able to sit and you know, watch the river and look down at the hot springs pool and so forth. But it's orange cones and chain link fencing right now.
I mean, a year from now, that the bridge will just be completed, or it'll still be closed.
A year from now, about a year from now, it should open.
Okay. If it's on schedule.
If it's on schedule.
Yep, if it's on schedule.
And it is on schedule
now?
If the
snow's on schedule, everybody will be able to get to Aspen.
Right, exactly. And it's on schedule now.
It's on schedule now. That's part of the reason they didn't want to wait until after the holiday season to dig up the streets, is so that they can be ready to close the old bridge and do the detour in August, so that they have 95 days for that final push to build and open the new bridge.
I think there's an interesting point. It occurred to me that Glenwood, with this bridge, Glenwood is going to benefit in the end. Of course, there's a lot of this new development on the other side of the river and all of that, but still, it feels as if Glenwood is taking a major hit, going through a lot of pain, essentially to be able to handle traffic that's going to Aspen. I mean, Glenwood was probably all by itself would do perfectly nicely with the bridge that was there before. It's that traffic to Aspen that
you
is requiring the new bridge.
You mean this $125 million project is a subsidy for Aspen business?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes.
Well, isn't,
there's no bitterness about that, is there? None.
If we listen to our president-elect, I mean, our infrastructure is falling apart. And I mean, wasn't the bridge falling apart anyway? I mean, it had to be replaced. I mean, how old is it?
It was not fun to cross that bridge.
Yeah, it's not just there's the argument.
It's like suck it in when you're driving, like as if that somehow makes your car smaller.
But again, that was because of the high volume of traffic going over that bridge, much of it on its way to Aspen. I mean, if that bridge was carrying a load that was just dealing with Glenwood, you wouldn't have, you wouldn't need a four-lane bridge. You wouldn't have those thundering trucks going over all day long. That bridge could probably handle a more normal traffic.
Right.
Aspen skews everything.
And, Aspen is going to get skewed. The downtown retail landscape for
I think you left an R out of there. Screwed, I think. Not skewed, yeah.
There's our analysis. Today, the city is doing an open house on the mall.
Right.
The pedestrian mall's going to get ripped up. I mean, they have to see what's underneath there, but the infrastructure below.
They're saying some of it is 60 years old,
the
water and the sewer lines.
So you think about what the bridge construction is doing for the downtown retailers in Glenwood. You think about what's going to happen when these malls get ripped up. What are they predicting? 2018 maybe for that? It's all summer work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the issue is that, working at the Daily News, 3 years ago, we brought this to light where it's like there's electrical cords, going through the stream in the middle of the mall so the outdoor restaurant can have power out there, and it's obviously way dangerous. So the city is now just tackling the person who's handling the bridge public relations is also handling the major tearing up of our downtown.
It's a niche industry.
Yes. So, Curtis, do you have any insight on what's happening there?
As you mentioned, this has been in discussion for quite some time now, and they've hired a team of distinguished consultants from all sorts of different firms. And the first public gathering seeking input from the citizens is going to take place outside of Wagner Park on Friday around lunchtime, and then also in the evening, where they're going to explain the need for this project, which is that you have this mall that's 40-something years old, and it needs some work. They need to redo the utilities underneath it. The thing about the bricks is most interesting to me, and I see this as being a future referendum, because we have the bricks are really cool. I think we got them from St. Louis in the 70s when we built the mall. The bricks themselves are from about 1900, and they were used, cobblestone streets in downtown St. Louis, and those people decided they didn't want them anymore. They wanted more modern paving, so they ripped up all these bricks and sold about 500,000 of them to Aspen. Well, we've used, I think they said they used 250 or 300,000 of them in paving the malls originally, And then whenever they need to replace them, they use more, and we're like down to our last like 10 bricks or something like that. So
auction them off. You could pay for the redo.
I think these are really cool historic bricks. Other people don't like them so much because they're kind of uneven. According to some people, it's really hard to walk in high heels.
Yes, it is.
You know, if you're going out to a fancy dinner. So we're going to have to come up with some new bricks. And I'm going to throw out a prediction here. People are not going to be happy with the new design of the bricks, and there's going to be a referendum.
Oh, brother.
or better yet, we can have two choices. It can be like a multiple choice vote. Which brick do you want?
I want yellow ones.
But this is at least a 4-year effort. This project is not going to be done until 2020 is what they're forecasting now. So it'll probably go even longer.
So it's our version of the Glenwood Bridge. I mean, in that sense of... Mm-hmm. You know, business, downtown business, retail, and art at the busiest time.
A lot of downtown businesses.
Right. Fortunately, they're all owned by these enormous corporations that don't mind losing
they
money.
They won't even notice.
Full circle. There you go. Not a problem.
Randy, you're the only news organization that covered a immigration forum last weekend. Can you shed some insight on what happened at that forum? Did anything get done, or was anything made more clear?
Well, it's the second one that's been held. Some local attorneys held one at the Glenwood Library right after the election, and then this one had some immigration attorneys from Denver and advocates. I think there was a representative of the Mexican consulate there. And there's a real effort among people who support immigrants to try to assuage their fears, say, look, nothing has happened yet. The laws that exist do provide you with some protections. I think part of it is to try to help people calm down and understand resources that they have, and to say that we don't really know what's going to happen. This one this weekend was attended by a couple of law enforcement officers, and I believe including Gene Schilling, the Carbondale police chief, who had written a letter just saying, look, we're not out to identify people who are here illegally or to deport them. That's not our job. Law enforcement wants people to be able to trust police so that they can report crimes. I mean, it doesn't make a community safer if immigrants can be victimized. Mm-hmm. So that's part of what's going on.
Snowmass Village just passed a similar resolution at the council table.
Mm-hmm. What does Lou Valario say, the sheriff in Garfield County?
Well, Lou says the law is the law, and if you came here illegally, you should be deported. But he also says it's not his job to identify people who are here illegally and to enforce that himself.
By the way, if we're talking about people nervous about the change in administration, perhaps the Colorado legalized pot industry might be holding some seminars to calm people down, since the prospective new attorney general is a fierce opponent of marijuana in any and all forms.
Yeah, has there been much discussion about...
No, I don't...
Not since his appointment, although he is famous for saying he thought the KKK was okay until he realized they smoked pot.
Okay.
Can't make it up.
You can't. So I'll sign off by saying thank you very much for taking the time and sharing your insights and analysis and commentary.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Glad to help.
Thanks, Carolyn.
This is Valley Roundup, a weekly media roundtable of analysis and commentary with writers and editors. Thanks to my guests, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Andy Stone and Roger Moralt, columnist for the Aspen Times, and Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.